we're exploring how to retain young professionals of color and stem the flow of Black and brown Milwaukeeans to larger cities. It is the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. Milwaukee's Common Council, it formed the Millennial Task Force at the end of 2019, and their task was to address the so-called brain drain. They met 15 times since the start of last year and presented their final report to the Common Council's Community and Economic Development Committee. The task force made dozens of recommendations that we will dig into. What will help attract and retain young people to Milwaukee? Did you leave Milwaukee in your 20s and never come back? Why? 800-642-1234. Marquela Ellison chairs the Milwaukee Millennial Task Force. She owns her own graphic design firm. She's president of Social X MKE. That's a Young Professionals Diversity and Inclusion Consulting Group. Marquela, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
Good morning. So in the past, you know, year and change, you've studied this problem. How big of a problem did you uncover with young people of color moving away and not returning?
Yeah. Good morning, everyone. Yeah, the millennials, we see it every day, especially since the pandemic, that we are losing a lot of talent for many, many reasons in the city. Being born and raised from Milwaukee, seeing different things that have changed over time. Those observations, plus all the speakers and presentations we had, was really eye-opening. We're losing people for a few reasons, and we broke that up into different categories in our report just to make sure we covered everything. That included transportation, infrastructure, employment and economic development, racial and criminal justice, health and wellness, education, and then marketing and storytelling. There's so many facets to it.
So many facets to it. And we're going to dig into those, but a little more about you. I know you opened your own graphic design firm while you were still in college, started your own business. What is your story for staying rooted in your hometown?
Yeah, you know, I proudly say, especially with 2020, that Milwaukee takes care of me. It really does. That, you know, we don't have a 6 degrees of separation. It's like 1.5. my mom was a small business owner. I was mainly raised by her. And when I went off to college, you know, it was an easy way to make money. I've always been involved. I think that's one of the special things about Milwaukee. You know, there's so many nonprofits. There's so many people here that are ready and willing to give back. And I think that's just always been a part of me since I've been young. So the clients I take on, enhancing their work. And I was doing this on a student level for student government and Black Student Union. And my clients continue to grow. It just made sense to start a business. I got more experience that way. And I really get to see myself making an impact in Milwaukee, which is a blessing.
I wonder, you know, do you find yourself the longer you live in Milwaukee, the more you learn about your city? Do you uncover things you don't know about it?
Oh, yes. All the time. I work in contract with the city through my business, but being chairwoman of the Millennial Task Force has been it's been interesting and eye opening. And I learned so much more about the city and its different departments. Just different processes and things like that, which have been really interesting. I feel like it's been a maturing way and like a kind of the government side, but also the neighborhoods, the different programs we have. I'm always learning something new about Milwaukee, and that's what makes me stay, makes me want to stay here and give an impact for sure.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Marquela Ellison, and she chaired the City of Milwaukee's Millennial Task Force, which released its final report of recommendations last month. You can join in. What do you think would attract young people to the city? Do you have recommendations? What are your thoughts on brain drain and young people leaving Milwaukee? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So let's look a little bit more at the task force. But I know in these 15 meetings you had some aha moments. What was eye-opening to you? When did you have those moments of that kind of took your breath away?
Yeah, well, one, although we're called the Millennial Task Force, I want to be sure to, you know, make sure we're not excluding anyone, to focus on a specific generation and more so focus on an age range. So like 17 to 38, I think is that key area. The eye-opening thing is that I think there are kind of two or three phases in life where you're experiencing Milwaukee in a way that will make you want to stay or make you want to leave. So our youth, our 17-year-olds, our juniors and seniors in high school, their experiences, their potential to find a job here or, you know, to get an education here or to feel confident about that or feel safe in Milwaukee. Those were things that needed to be addressed. So that's like a starting point. But then there are also things to think about when you're in your 30s and looking to buy a home here and raise a family here. So that was one thing to keep in mind, is that there are just about three different age gaps that need to be tended to. So this recommendations, the recommendations overall cover that.
Yeah. So each of those age periods has its own very specific set of things that are really key. How much do racial and policing issues within both the city and the state contribute to some of the reasons why millennials of color leave Milwaukee for other metro areas?
Well, one of the things that we have as a recommendation, and this is something I've noticed just growing up here in Milwaukee, I currently live in River West, but I grew up on the north side. I went to Vincent High School. I also lived in the Washington Park neighborhood. And one thing that's a big disadvantage is just how evenly distributed amenities are. We met and chatted with Complete Streets, and you know, we're wondering, instead of taking a neighborhood that's already pretty nice and enhancing it more, how can we even out these neighborhoods and experiences for everyone? Everyone should have access to a park. Everyone should have access to healthcare that's not far away. You don't have to drive miles away. Same for your schooling and different amenities like that. So one of our recommendations is to do some type of report throughout the city, looking at each neighborhood and what it has and what it doesn't have and how we can enhance those neighborhoods.
You know, there was one line in the report. It just said, stop ticketing jaywalkers. What was that about?
Yeah, that was led by our, by Jeremy Foyer and Noel Hegel of Will and Sprocket. So we did break up into work groups, and one of their recommendations was to abolish jaywalking. It's just an old school rule. You know, we want people to navigate the city. You want this to be a very pedestrian friendly city, you know, to really focus things on the pedestrian and on biking or different sources of transportation. So we just felt like that was an old rule that needed to be let go of, so you could really navigate some of these more popular areas in a looser way.
What about housing? What are some of your recommendations around, you know, becoming a homeowner?
Yeah, we definitely think that we should develop a Milwaukee residency program, something for just startups in general to house themselves or home themselves here in Milwaukee and in some of the different neighborhoods, of course, to increase employment, but also just incentives with those who are working here. If they buy a home or a city home, how can we give them some type of credit or a grant or something to encourage them to buy a home and stay here? Especially our city employees.
Marquela Ellison, she chaired the Milwaukee Millennial Task Force. It presented its 41-page report last month. Did you leave Milwaukee to go to college elsewhere or maybe to seek a fresh start with more opportunities in another city? How long were you away from Milwaukee? How do you feel about returning? And what helped you decide whether to move back to your roots? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with Marquela Ellison on the Ideas Network. We're discussing the findings of Milwaukee's Millennial Task Force on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to the Wisconsin Policy Forum, people who move away from our state tend to be more highly educated than those who stay in Wisconsin or who move here from elsewhere. The task force noted Milwaukee's worsening net domestic migration over the last decade, meaning more people were moving out of the city destined for other metro areas than those moving out of other metros to Milwaukee. Are you new to the city? What brought you to the area? How has your experience been? Join in 800-642-1234. Marquela Ellison chaired the Milwaukee Millennial Task Force, and she's with us for about 8 more minutes. Marquela, the final report outlines strategies for this investment in neighborhoods, as we've been talking about. What are talent investment districts?
Yeah, so we were, during our meetings, just with discussions, and want to make sure I credit Jeremy for this too. TIDs are talent investment districts. This would be a way to have the city even collaborate with corporations or businesses to focus on bringing specific talent here. And definitely want to shout out like Milky Way Tech Hub, but what would it look like to make like Washington Park the tech hub community for corporations to invest in, incentivizing their employees to live in certain neighborhoods, but also giving them grants or giving them experiences to start their own businesses. So there, it'd be like a 365 type of thing, but really investing in a neighborhood and its resources, teaching, cultivating new skills, encouraging people to live there, and things of that sort.
So in creating like a cluster or a tech hub, what would that do? What would that cultivate?
Well, of course, the overall goal is to relieve the brain drain. We need to keep our talent here. So we'll retain our talent here, mm-hmm. giving them a place to stay, to have roots here. It also give people opportunities. There's an issue with, you know, finding where, what are you doing after you graduate? You know, if you don't go to college, we really need to strengthen these other skills, coding, trades, things of that sort, other things that you can do, and making sure people are able to access them and are aware of them.
So speaking of college, the census does say that, you know, college age cohort is the largest group to leave Milwaukee area between 2011 and 2015. Mm-hmm. What does this say about higher education opportunities in the city?
Yeah, we have some really great programs for sure. The sponsor scholar program, the TRIO pre-college program. But they, when we met with them, they could always use more funding. They could use more exposure. I think that we really need to have a stronger connection between our schools, our public schools, and our local colleges to really make sure that people understand what the next step can be. But then aside of that, working with like Employ Milwaukee and some of the different trades to make sure people are aware of different pathways and that it's an easy way to access it. We know we have to be honest, at 17 or 18, your first time to kind of become yourself or to move is when you graduate. Usually you want to go to a college out of town, or, you know, you go to the military, but this is your chance to leave. You're an adult now. Mm. How can we make sure that they want to stay here? There's a lot of things as far as the mindset, you know, hearing all these negative things about, you know, this being a worst place for black men to grow up. Some of the different issues we have as far as violence in the city, you know, this makes our young people want to leave. And, you know, these things need to be fixed on top of making sure they understand what they can do and what's possible here.
Yeah, I mean, because these things are, they need to be fixed, as you said, and they are true. And so you have to not only tackle these problems, but also say, you know, buy into this. You can do mm-hmm. your part and make a change.
Yeah. So we put in our report, of course, increasing funds to enhance these programs that we already have. Mm-hmm. That was one big thing about the report is, you know, you're finding balance between creating something new and really supporting something that already exists and is doing a great job. We have some really great colleges here. I'm a UWM alumni myself. And the pre-college program is pretty small. They could use more support, but they do an amazing job. You know, and some kids have more exposure to things like that than others. So we also put in a report just having a storyteller, someone who can really share more stories and more good news in Milwaukee, getting ahead of that narrative of there's nothing to do in Milwaukee. There's nowhere I can go. No, here are these three or four programs, or here's the Earn and Learn program to give you experience outside of school, working somewhere else.
Yeah. How do you see that storytelling work? Like, how do you incorporate that into a city's plan?
Yeah. So I do work with the city a lot. I also contract with them, and I know most departments have their own PIO or PR person overall. So I see a filter system where there's just a new department created, but that is closely connected with all the different departments and council members to really get a grip on these different programs. You know, I did Earn and Learn when I was in high school, but I don't think a lot of people know about it.
Yeah, Earn and Learn?
Yeah, so Earn and Learn is a city program that gives high school students, I believe 14 to 18, jobs with different businesses and corporations in Milwaukee. So when I was young, I worked for Metcalf Park Association. You know, it basically helps teenagers get jobs over the summer. So something to do, you know, over the summer outside of, you know, of course, having fun. But, you know, it's small and, you know, they fundraise for it. But, you know, how can we get more money behind that? How can that be like a really big thing in Milwaukee that you get an earn and learn job over the summer? So you're learning and working and already building roots with different businesses here in Milwaukee before you even cross the stage.
Building connections, building a resume and experience along with a job. We're talking with Marquela Ellison, who chaired the Milwaukee Millennial Task Force in her native city, Milwaukee, where she owns her own graphic design firm. And she co-founded SocialX MKE, which is a young professionals diversity consulting group. We're talking about how to attract and retain young working professionals in Milwaukee. With your thoughts at 800-642-1234, you can share your story about leaving, returning, what has made you stay. Marquela, how should the city look to, you know, developing transportation and figuring out better options for moving around the city? And I know you said there is like 1 degree of separation between everyone. You go to Pick and Save and you see your neighbors, but what should change about the transportation system?
So, we talked about, you know, giving more priority to pedestrians. So one of the recommendations is to develop an ambitious pedestrian zone roadmap that converts one street or alley of each neighborhood into a pedestrian plaza or like a public space. So again, building that community, I think with COVID, we're enjoying outdoors a lot more, but to create these spaces in different neighborhoods. So that's kind of on the flip side of transportation, but making sure that there are more spaces for us to walk and move and come together. We talked, of course, about jaywalking. And then also just some of the different, again, the complete streets, just making sure that we're prioritizing these new neighborhoods that don't have bike routes. Instead of increasing, you know, more exposure to streets that already, you know, come a long way in being updated in advance. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it just helps you want to get out and be a part of your city more. I have a dog. We walk a lot. And it would encourage me more if the streets were kept up or if I felt safe or I wasn't going to get hit. So we want to activate the streets to get people out here and enjoying good old Milwaukee more.
With the task force, what was your last meeting like? I mean, the group had worked together and met so many times. You started to mm-hmm. have these smaller working groups. Mm-hmm. You know, how did you end it?
Yeah, well, we actually ended it getting ready to prep and do our presentation for the Community and Economic Development Committee. So really, you know, we spent most of our time together. Through most of those meetings. And the last two meetings, we separated into work groups to really hammer down on specific recommendations for those few categories I mentioned earlier. So we really just came together to have that final session to really say, okay, this is it. You know, we've covered everything we could in every way. And now it was about, you know, how can we deliver this? What are our biggest takeaways from it?
Do you think I'm sorry to jump in. Do you think the Common Council will move on these recommendations? Will you see action?
Definitely. Now, you know, I want to be realistic. We definitely have some great short-term goals. We have some great long-term goals. And some of them are pretty easy fixes. And some are going to take some knocking down. But I'm happy to say we've already started to work on one focus, which is how can we attract more remote workers? Mm-hmm. You know, that's become a buzz right now, is that, you know, a lot of people are working for companies and living in different cities. So how can Milwaukee be a part of that action? Again, highlighting our amenities, the cost of living, which is reasonable. How can we make that better?
Marquela, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Marquela Ellison chaired the City of Milwaukee Millennial Task Force. Ahead this hour, it's Madison's fire chief and the manufacturer of a new fire engine. News update is next on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with more on a fading business with a loyal customer base.
Browsing video stores for the perfect rental has long been replaced with the ease of scrolling online streaming services from home. But there's still a group of Wisconsinites who prefer nostalgia to convenience. Andy Turner has more.
The video stores that once brought a slice of Hollywood to town are now empty buildings that might house vaping shops or check cashing stores. In January, Family Video, which outlasted similar national chains like Blockbuster and Hollywood Video by a decade, announced it was closing its remaining 250 stores, including 23 in Wisconsin. But some video stores have held on. Four Star Video Cooperative has operated in Madison since 1985 and has found a niche with people who do not want to be entertained on streaming alone. Louis Peterson is Four Star's owner. He says customers enjoy browsing, plus there's a far greater variety than streaming channels and a better sense of permanence that you don't always find in ever-changing streaming lineups controlled by large media companies like Disney and Netflix.
There is definitely always will be a place for physical media, just as something that is an unchanging record of film history and allowing people to have access to that.
Four Star customer Evelyn Kale says she first went to Four Star in 2004 when she visited her older sister in Madison and they rented the Johnny Depp thriller Secret Window. She encountered Four Star again about a decade later when she was in nursing school and noticed Four Star offered a flat rate subscription plan.
And I just saw it on a sandwich board. And I was like, you know, that's a pretty good deal. I don't pay for internet and they have a wide movie selection. And I've been going ever since then.
Kale became a volunteer in 2019, around the time the store's four-person cooperative ownership fell apart and before Peterson was ultimately able to find a new partner. She says she saw Peterson put his heart and soul into the business.
From the other patrons at the video store, like obviously, like no one wanted to see it go. So I think, you know, a lot of people just came together and said, what can we do to help?
Beyond providing entertainment, Four Star is a resource in other ways for the Madison community. Craig Warner taught Afro-American studies and integrated liberal studies at UW-Madison for 35 years before retiring 2 years ago. He says he frequently showed movies in his classes and with small groups of students. He relied heavily on Four Star over the years. He also praises Four Star's contribution to film culture in Madison.
I like the culture. I like the sense of belonging to a place where film matters to people, and it still does in Madison.
Brian Alberth wants to pay tribute to stores like Four Star. Alberth is making a documentary about the store and other niche video stores in cities like Austin, Seattle, and Philadelphia. The idea for the documentary was sparked by Albert's frustration that he had stopped visiting Four Star, or any video store for that matter.
The video store was a necessary place to find wherever I lived. You know, just like your local grocery store, gas stations, it also had to be the video store and the movie theater.
Growing up in Racine, Albert loved looking at VHS and DVD covers and browsing the aisles of video stores.
You know, I think other people hold on to football games or to old cars and A-tracks or whatever it is, you know, maybe it's vinyl, but people hold on to things because it brings back a sense of nostalgia, a sense of, you know, some element of growing up that they don't want to lose.
Video stores might be outmatched by streaming's convenience and further pummeled by the pandemic, but they live on thanks to passionate fans who prefer community to ease.
Andy Turner is a freelance journalist, college English instructor, and radio DJ who lives in Milwaukee. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every Wisconsin Life story? Subscribe to our podcast and find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Maureen McCollum.
And now we tour Madison's first electric zero emissions fire engine. It's the Pierce Volterra Pumper, designed with Oshkosh Corporation's electric drivetrain. Are you a firefighter or an EMT? Would you want to use an electric fire truck on the job? Should municipalities move toward electric vehicles? It's 800-642-1234. Eric Linsmeyer is Business Unit Director of Electrical and Software Technology at Pierce Manufacturing in Appleton. Eric, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. We also have Stephen Davis with us, Chief of the Madison Fire Department. Chief Davis, welcome to you.
Hi, Kate. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on with you this morning.
Well, good morning. And Chief Davis, let's start with you. Fire trucks, they carry really important life-saving equipment, not to mention water. Why go all electric?
Well, that's a great question. I'm a fire chief here in Madison. I've been with the department for 32 years now, and absolutely love fire engines and fire trucks. It's a passion of mine. And several years ago, the Madison City Council and led by the mayor's office passed a pretty strong initiative to get our fleet 100% renewable energy and zero net carbon emissions by the year 2030. And so that puts agencies like fire departments in kind of an awkward position because
it's like you're on notice.
Yeah. And as we saw this week with the fire in Rockton, Illinois, when the fire engine leaves the station, we don't know when it's going to come back. So it needs to have a system that can possibly meet these goals of zero net carbon emissions, but also be able to perform for sometimes days on end. And so we reached out to Pierce, I believe it was in 2017, 2018, and kind of told them of these goals that were coming at us and we needed a solution. And I suspect they probably had something in the works already. And we were ecstatic when they reached back out. I believe it was in about 2018 and said, hey, would you be interested in working with us on this project? And in my mind, it was an absolute no-brainer.
Well, Eric, pick up the story on your side with Pierce Manufacturing. You know, when this fire department reaches out to you and says, hey, what do you got for us? How long have you had electric in the works?
Well, Oshkosh Corporation, you know, has been working to develop electric drives for over 25 years. But it was around the time that Chief Davis mentions that we were just pulling it together and considering how do we integrate this properly into a fire apparatus. And so the timing just worked out well that we were just starting to pull the stuff together, and the city of Madison was reaching out saying, hey, what things do you have that we could maybe make answer the call for zero emissions vehicles?
How close are you on these fire trucks in terms of making them just equal on par with what's already out there with gas powered?
I think we're there right now. Our vehicle today that we're the technology demonstrator that we're using with the city of Madison, or the city of Madison's using on our behalf, is a vehicle that does perform at the same level of the current apparatus that's out there today.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about an all-electric fire engine. We have engineer Eric Linsmeyer, who's with the manufacturer of the new fire engine that hit the streets of Madison recently. Stephen Davis is chief of the Madison Fire Department. Your insights, as well as your community going all-electric, what questions do you have about turning over your fleets and your emergency vehicles? 800-642-1234. So, Chief Davis, you know, what has it been like? This fire engine apparently has been out on hundreds of calls. How is it performing?
Well, it's performing excellent. It came to us, and as we worked through the details of all the needs that we would have for infrastructure and different things like that, as it got closer and closer, and we saw some of the Pierce Manufacturing's test data on the vehicle. I was pretty convinced early on that it was going to work well. And I would suggest that it probably outperforms what my expectations were. And just as an example, the very first day we put it in service, it went on about 12 calls, and the battery capacity never dropped below 74%, which told me instantly that we've got it designed the right way for battery capacity. So the idea is that the vehicle goes on calls, you know, not all of those 12 calls occurred. That was over a 24-hour span. And so they've got time to come back, recharge the batteries, and go on the next call. And I can't be happier how the technology has worked and the performance of the vehicle itself has worked.
How long is it taking to recharge?
It takes, if the batteries are at 0%, and Eric can jump in here because he's the technology guy on, but we can go from 0 to 100% in about 90 minutes with the charger. So it's a really rapid charge system.
Eric, is that type of performance what you're seeing out of this fire engine?
Yeah, it is. And so recharging batteries that, you know, they rarely come in at a fully depleted state, right? So while it does take that amount of time for a complete charge, often the vehicle returns with something much more than that on it, and it is considerably faster to top it off and prepare it for the next call that the department's asked to support.
Well, let's bring in a call now. This is another Eric. Eric in Green Bay. Hi there, Eric.
Hi. So how many batteries are on this unit? What are they, lithium batteries? And do they actually run the pumps that actually supply power to the pumps that actually pump the water?
Eric Linsmeyer, go ahead.
So there's in this vehicle as it's configured today, there's two strings of seven batteries, and they are a lithium-based battery that we use and have configured in the apparatus. Today we're pumping primarily off of the engine, but the vehicle is capable and will pump through the batteries and the electric system as well. Just as most people know, pumping consumes a lot of power and it's consumed quickly. So it's really the focus is, you know, on short bursts or smaller fire. The vehicle can certainly support that off the battery system. But as Chief Davis has mentioned earlier, that when you have those extended calls, those things that are hard to determine, we can seamlessly transition into an internal combustion engine that will drive the pump, indefinitely to support those needs, so that they have the performance required to support the scene that they're on.
So you would call it basically a hybrid, right?
Yeah, it's a parallel drive on the vehicle here, but yes, it's just basically operating that. We will operate under electric power throughout the vehicle's use and operation. And if you find yourself in a depleted mode on the electric because you weren't able to charge in time or recharge in the way needed, the internal combustion engine will seamlessly transition and provide that continuous operation that's needed.
What do you think of that type of backup, Chief Davis?
Well, that to me is the key moving forward. And until the battery industry can catch up and increase the power storage and the power supplies and things like that, as a fire chief, I have a hard time, as all fire chiefs do, pulling up to a scene of a fire, sending firefighters into a burning building and not knowing that we're going to have complete power as long as we're going to need it. So the internal combustion engine as the backup source on this is ideal, because if, like Eric said, if the batteries get depleted, we've got a backup system in place. Now, you know, the vehicle's been in service since May 21st, and other than for training and forcing the engine to come on for data collection, we have not had to use the internal combustion, the diesel engine at all for backup. So, but we know it's there, and that gives our firefighters a great deal of confidence that that this vehicle is always going to perform for them.
We're with Madison Fire Chief Stephen Davis there and engineer Eric Linsmeyer of Pierce Manufacturing. They're talking about Madison's first electric fire engine and what it can do. Do you drive an electric vehicle? What do you think about an electric fire truck? Do you think it could handle the heavy-duty work? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer. Ken, thanks for being here. Madison's first electric fire engine is in service at the city's busiest fire station. We're discussing its new Pierce Volterra electric pumper with Fire Chief Stephen Davis here and engineer Eric Linsmeyer from Pierce Manufacturing. That's the firm behind the electric fire trucks, subsidiary of Oshkosh Corporation. They're with us for about 7 more minutes. Jack in Caledonia wants to ask about price tag and about battery replacement. Jack, hi, go ahead.
Yeah, that's my concern with all the electrical, you know, cars and things is one thing is the amount of energy we're going to have to, you know, new power plants are going to have to build, you know, to charge batteries at night for people or during the day. And then the other thing is the cost of the battery. Most batteries last, you know, car batteries last 6 years or so, and then they have to get a new one. My question is, how long do these lithium batteries last, and what's the replacement cost for those?
Eric.
Sure. So that's a great question, and it's something that continues to be difficult to answer, honestly. Within the market, the batteries and the battery technology continues to develop and continues to become more affordable. Today, the batteries we have, you know, integrated into the vehicle, you know, we expect a solid 14 years life cycle on them without question. But, you know, really, until we use them more and understand a little bit more about that, we won't be able to dial in that understanding completely, though we have a good expectations for them. You know, and as you mentioned, there's more to the vehicle than just the vehicle itself from an electrical standpoint. We do have to consider infrastructure and prepare for that as well. And it's something we're also working on. You know, we consider ourselves a full solution provider. We're not just looking at the vehicle itself. We are trying to find ways to prepare and support the industries we serve, you know, in this case here particularly the fire departments, with charging stations and solutions and working with the municipalities and energy suppliers to prepare for that as we go forward.
So what about the price tag, Eric, on a fire engine? I know fire engines are very expensive, whether they're diesel-powered or electric. What are the costs?
Well, you know, today this vehicle is a technology demonstrator, and really that means it's built with a lot of parts that are not in production and getting production pricing. So it's difficult for us to give you, there is no answer on what will it cost by the time we're in production. We do know, we do plan and expect it to cost more than a traditional a fire apparatus as it stands today. But by how much is difficult, as I mentioned, it's pretty rapid with regard to development and battery technology. And the cost per kilowatt hour continues to fall, and new targets are set. So as we work through that, it'll help close the gap, but it's a little bit too early to tell where our production pricing will be at this moment.
Chief Davis, fire trucks, expensive machinery, I would imagine, on your budget. Yeah,
they are, and I'm a fire chief that throws nickels around like they're manhole covers. So obviously we're concerned about pricing always. But if we have the goals that we need to meet, sometimes we might have to spend a little more to reach that goal. So, you know, I think the key is that I think Pierce is really on to the next generation of fire apparatus and how they'll be propelled into the future. And we're just excited in Madison to be a part of this journey with them.
Yeah. Charlie now in Beaver Dam has a question. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, yes. How about rural fire departments? I mean, they say they want to be zero emissions by 2030. Well, most fire departments keep their trucks 30, 40 years. Is there going to be a grandfather clause, or don't you have a clue?
Charlie, thank you. Chief Davis, could you broach yep. that about rural departments?
I can. And Charlie, that's a great question. And when I talk about those sustainability goals, those are imposed by the Madison elected officials. And so we're talking just about Madison when I say that. But I have been surprised, Charlie, how many smaller and more rural communities have similar plans or goals in their elected bodies as well. You know, I think this Volterra vehicle, when we first started to look at the technology, I thought there's no way in heck that, a small rural department in Wisconsin would ever probably be able to put this in service but now that it's been in service and we've looked at the data on it, I don't see why they couldn't. The drivetrain, the electric drive side lasts really, really, right now, I think we're at 37 to 40 miles on a charge it can go. Mm. And so you got to keep in mind that it does have that internal combustion engine. So when they drive it to the scene, that engine can take over and it can sit there for days at a barn fire if it needs to. I think the future is bright and the technology, as it improves, even in the coming years, it's going to be an option for even rural communities.
So, Eric, when do you see full rollout? And do you have pre-orders already from other cities?
So there's been a lot of interest from cities and communities across the nation, which has really been great for us to see. And it's something we were hoping to see. the rollout, though, is we're out about a couple years right now, sometime targeting 23 right now for our full rate production and supporting those communities. That's our target at this time.
You know, I scoped out your competition next door in Minnesota. What do you make of these fire trucks that, can raise in floodwaters, can crab walk with their tires? Is this the future of fire engines?
Well, fire engines are configured a lot of different ways, depending on the needs of the customers that are purchasing them. And Pierce has had technology for all-wheel steer and rear-wheel steer, and we can configure that on vehicles today from crab walk and things like that. We do that now. Our forwarding lines are really high as well. It depends. If you need to go through that high water today, we support that with our product as well. Everybody has a different opinion and different approach. We don't feel we need to redesign the fire truck to support electrification. Yeah. We're really working to introduce electrification into an existing product line today. Right?
Well, Eric and Chief Davis, thank you for joining us. Stephen Davis, Chief of the Madison Fire Department. Eric Linsmeyer, Business and Unit Director at Pierce Manufacturing. You're listening to them on the Ideas Network.